welcome back to the Wine Show. You've got Simon Nash here and Nick Montague, and we're at Pizzini Wines in the King Valley. Now, we're joined by Warren Proft of Chrismont.
G'day, Warren.
Good morning.
Morning, mate. We were just chatting to Warren. He's, I don't know, how tall are you? Six, seven, or something.
Yeah.
So after seeing the Millawa footy team turn up at the pub last night, we were just asking whether he'd been roped into the footy team and, you know, stuck in the ruck or something.
Yeah, that's true. Coming from New South Wales, didn't know too much about the Victorian footy, but I was only here a few weeks and I got a knock on the door by the first grade, second grade coach trying to come and play for the local side.
Come and play for the locals.
Yeah, the first grade coach was a bit disappointed when I told him I didn't play footy before, but the second grade coach said, "No worry, mate, get in there, we'll show you.
We'll teach you. Yeah. Yeah, just stand there and put your arms up."
Just a season.
Just a season, yeah.
So you, from New South Wales, and you started your winemaking actually with Sam's dad, Sam Miranda's dad, business.
Yeah, it was my first serious job.
Up at Griffith.
I was working with Miranda Wines up in Griffith,
yeah.
After studying Wagga.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So, that was that's quite apt little link there. We didn't know that before we put the two interviews together. So tell us about coming down then to the King Valley to make wine. You've been here how long, 25 years or so?
Yeah, I believe so. I certainly had something to do with the area for 25 years. The working in Griffith, the Miranda Company made a big investment into the King Valley by buying a lot of fruit and starting their own a brand with the area. And as winemakers, we used to come down to the area a lot and visit the growers and check out the fruit. And it was one of the highlights of the year, really, to come down. Everyone loved to come to the King Valley because it's so contrasting to Griffith. And the people were great, too. So that was my introduction to the area, and I ultimately made a decision to come down here and stay.
Yeah. So where do you live? Where do you live now?
I live here in Whitfield, a couple of k's up the road.
Great. It's a good part of the world. So do you get over to the Mountain View Hotel a bit?
A little too regularly.
I don't think we've actually ever been here without going to the Mountain View Hotel, have we?
No, yeah, I think it's important.
Yep. Yeah. Probably inadvertently rubbed shoulders before.
Yes, probably. So tell us a little bit about Chrismont and the range that you do. We don't have to run through every wine, but typically the philosophy there from a winemaking point of view.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Chrismont, I guess like a lot of the other Italian family wineries, have really made a name for themselves in alternative or in particularly Italian varietal wines. And I guess we're no different. We've got a range called Lizona that they, you know, started up just to showcase the Italian varieties as opposed to the Chrismont brand, which we stick to the more the conventional varieties. The Italian varieties have really taken off. I mean, the King Valley has really become renowned for it. We do a range of whites, Pinot Grigio, Anise, and the Prosecco for sparkling, and reds, Barbera, Sangiovese, Nebbiolo, Sagrantino, Nera d'Avola, and we just did a new Aglianico this year, which is a first time. Mm. So it's looking fantastic. So it's showing a lot of promise. Our philosophy basically is to let the variety do the talking because they're new, because people aren't really aware of them. We really want to show them for what they are and their differences. I mean, for example, Barbera is quite a high acid variety and very perfumed, so we want to really have a wine that shows off that acidity and that perfume. Sagrantino is very muscular and bold and tannic, so we don't want to hide that either. We want to produce a Sagrantino with you know, bold tannins. Even if some people can't handle it, well, that's what the variety is, so you either love it or loathe it.
Or choose a different variety.
Pretty much.
Did you work with all of these varieties in your early stages of your career?
No, because they're all quite new, really. A lot of them have only been in the country for 10 or so years.
Okay.
The original Sangiovese and Barberas have been around for a while, but a lot of these new varieties, and particularly the new clones, have really only been imported over the last 20 years and have been, you know, distributed and proliferated since then.
Mm. Aglianico, that's an interesting one because that's starting to pop up in a few places now.
Yeah, that's right. It's again, it's another quite a late variety, and we had to be very careful where we put this one. We actually got one of our contract growers to plant it because we didn't believe our vineyard sites on our properties were warm enough. So, and well, this is the first year, and so far, you know, we're really happy with it.
And how many years did it take you to get fruit off that vine?
3 years, and that's because he grafted over onto existing rootstock, so he had the roots in the ground already.
Okay. And that comes from, I can't quite recall what part of Italy that comes from. It's quite a deep coloured.
It is. You're testing me out there too. It's because it's so new, I haven't really memorised where it's from. I can't remember whether it's further south. I think it is on the southern side, yeah.
But I just noticed the redness of the deepness of the colour compared to some of those other Italian varietals.
Absolutely, I'm very stoked about the colour this year. Mind you, all the reds this year showed excellent colour and intensity. I think it's just a great year for red. But Alanico particularly, it looks fantastic.
So your qualities there, is the quantity pretty good, this vintage, 21?
Yeah. No, the quantities were there as well. And that's the irony, really, is that often you don't see quantity and quality together, but they weren't excessive quantities, but the
because last year with the smoke and all of that, it was sort of a little bit more tricky, wasn't it? How do you guys fare?
Yeah, look, good and bad. We chose not to make any reds last year because the smoke levels in the reds we thought were too high to even bother, and I'm glad we didn't because we did a lot of trial wine making and there was smoke in the red wines we trialed. But as far as whites were concerned, with a bit of careful extraction and careful winemaking, we're able to have a successful white harvest. I rate the Rieslings, Pinot Grigios and Proseccos better or as good as any other ones we've produced, so I'm really glad we
pursued it. Is that because you got them off before the smoke actually came, or is it just the difference in the variety?
It's sort of a bit of a complex thing, but we're just lucky in the upper part of the King Valley that we missed a lot of the smoke.
Yeah.
We did get smoke, but we just missed a lot of it. So the levels weren't terribly high in the grapes to start with. And with white wines, you're getting the juice off the skins very quickly, and that was the key. Get the juice off the skins, don't press them too hard. And so we basically, a yielding juice that had very, very low smoke, if any, in it already. So that was the...
Because we talked a fair bit about it around the time, and it's just you can't take the risk. Can you? For your brand, you just no one would.
Well, that's right. It's a big punt, and if you're making a lot of wine, it's a very big punt.
Mm. You've got a beautiful new cellar door. It's probably a couple of years old, I guess now.
Yeah, given four now. Sort of, time flies.
Wow. Because I remember it being in a little room down, at the base of the hill, in a way.
Essentially, it was the garage. But decked out very nicely.
Yep.
Under the house there, so it's very cellar-like. Yeah.
Yeah. So and now it's a beautiful aspect looking out over the vineyard and the
new cellar door. It's become it was well overdue, but it's been a real coup for the company. It's become a real destination. People are blown away by the views when they come through and see through the wall of glass at the outlooking. It's like being up in a 30-story building, looking down over the vineyards.
Because it really drops away dramatically, doesn't it?
It does, right on the top of the hill there. And the restaurant has been going really well. The food's great, and it's a great combination. And we're finding now people are coming to the King Valley just to have lunch or dine at Chrismont. And then, of course, while they're there, they'll buy some wine, they'll come through other cellar doors. So it's been a real plus for the whole area.
It's an absolute must, isn't it, having some destination cellar doors like that.
And food offerings that are real quality. And, it's a real, as you say, you build your sort of trip around a lunch like that or a dinner. Or
absolutely.
Is it open for dinner as well?
No, just lunch.
Just lunch, yeah. It's pretty good spot. I think we should wander over there later on after this.
Well, we didn't get there yesterday, so it has to be on the agenda today.
So, definitely. So if we come over and have a taste at the cellar door, what should we be looking out for? What are some of your... What are some of the wines that you'd point to people to?
Well, straight away, I would... besides all the others, you've heard about all the others, I'm sure. I'm going to tell you the different ones.
Yeah.
We've just released a late harvest Arnise that has been a couple of years maturing in bottles. It's in 2018. We left a few rows of Arnise to go rotten. It was a bit of a combination of botrytis and dehydration, but we've come up with a really nice, luscious offering there in a half bottle. So definitely
so is
try that one.
Something with cheese, something with desserts and things.
Yep. Dessert, cheese. It's not the style of wine I think you'd sit there and sip away on. Mm. I mean, depends.
Yeah. But it would get pretty sweet.
It is quite sweet. Yeah. It's not as sweet as your sticky Sauternes of Griffith, for example. It's a little drier than that, but it still has the same flavour and the same.
And is that something you'll do each year, or it's just some years, or when you need more stock of it?
Yeah, some years. Not every year is suited to that style. Yeah. We made some this year too, because it's been quite a wet year. Well, we thought it was going to be a lot wetter than it was. But rain and coolness did come in towards the end of the season, so we did leave a few rows, and we have made a bit more this year as well to back it up.
And anise, is that something that goes well with that style of late harvest?
I wouldn't know, the results prove it. Yep. But it certainly, in my mind, didn't have the history.
Yep.
But it was fruit that we had available, and we just thought we'd... We probably had a bit more anise than we needed, so let's leave some out and see what we can do with it.
So to get that dehydration, did you cut the cane, or you just literally
left it, yeah. No, we're actually looking for botrytis, but as a result, we also got some dehydration, and that was just a function of the season too. I mean, 18 was a warmer, drier year. Mm-hmm. We probably got more botrytis this year.
Yeah, and have you noticed it on that block beforehand? Or
no,
have you never
really
left anything on there long enough?
No, we didn't leave it long enough on there.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And so another one worth trying is the Sagrantino. It's becoming very... people are noticing it now. I'm getting a lot of comments from people regarding the Sagrantino who like a wine with a bit more structure and tannin.
Yep.
So it's definitely one worth trying.
It's a great food wine, too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, trying Celador is one thing, but trying it with lunch is another.
So what sort of things have you had it with that you'd like... That you do like, you know, food-wise?
Oh, the slow-cooked lamb shoulders and things like that. They're just the, you know, nice, wet-cooked, soft meat and a bit of fat and stuff in there. It just really melts with it.
Yeah. It makes you hungry, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And just for a curio wine as well, we've also... we're one of the few wineries in Australia that do Marzomino.
Right.
So Marzomino is a little-known northern Italian Trentino variety. Mm-hmm. And I think Michelini's in Myrtleford do one, and so do we as a commercial dry red. But we also do, because it's a hard sell. I mean, most people who taste it like it, buy it. But we also do a semi-sweet Frizzante version of it, just to raise the profile of the variety. And Celador, incredibly popular. I wouldn't call it a super sweet wine, but we're just trying to balance the sweetness with the tannin. So sweet up front, dry finish. With a bit of spritz, and if some people who say don't drink sweet wine, no, don't want to try it, so they try it anyway, and they respect it.
Typically
they
like it.
So popular in the summer months, that one.
Absolutely, and if you can imagine a Christmas turkey and cranberry sauce and that sort of savoury sweet, it's a perfect combo.
It might even have to appear on the table on New Year's Day. So
yes, right. So what's the difference between Frizzante and Moscato, say, as a... Is it essentially the same thing?
Well, Frizzante is just an Italian word for spritzy, really. So, as opposed to sparkling, I think sparkling is spumante.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, these wines aren't sparkling. They're not full sparkling. They're only, I think, 4 grams per litre of CO2 as opposed to 10.
Okay.
So they've got a spritz to them, but not a full sparkle. So that's why we call it Frizzante, Marzomino Frizzante.
Yeah.
It sounds nice.
Yeah.
But Moscato is typically our Frizzante too.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably where the confusion maybe lies, but anything with a bit of spritz is Frizzante. Yeah.
How many cases do you make a year, roughly?
About 20,000 all up.
It's big enough.
It's not super big, but it's certainly big enough to keep us very busy. Yeah.
And we'd see it in some bottle shops in Melbourne.
Yeah, we're mainly focused on the independents.
Yep.
And it's one or two. I think there might be one or two lines in Dan's here and there, but other than that, mostly independents.
Yeah.
And we're very strong on premise as well.
So you've got a sales team?
Yeah, we've got a sales team. and we also got a distributor as well, so yeah, covering the capital cities.
So do you get out into the trade normally, you know, in normal times? Do you go and see the restaurants?
Yeah, I don't mind doing it, actually. It's a good couple of days out. Going to support the distributors. We often go to Brisbane, Sydney, sometimes down in Melbourne. And, yeah, it's just a very different perspective to get out of the vineyard, get out of the winery, get into the city. Don't get to the city much.
Yeah.
And it's a good eye-opener and see how the business is done at the other end.
So how are you when the sommelier says, "Nah, I don't like that"?
Yeah, interesting. But I'm pretty accepting of the fact that everyone's got their different tastes. But I don't get that too often.
Don't you?
No.
That's good. that would be certainly, you don't know what I've gone through to get this wine into this bottle.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Mostly, I mean, if they say they don't like it, generally they'll back it up by saying, "I don't think it'll fit my list,"
which is
a very polite way of saying it. But then again, they know their list, they know their clientele.
Yeah, and also they know what holes they've got in that list, holes to fill. Mm. So, yeah. Anything else in store over at Chrismont? Obviously, that project would have been massive, building up to that, the restaurant and cellar door changeover. And that's 4 years on. So any other new plantings that you're looking at? And
No plantings as such in the pipeline. The the new Alianico variety is the latest thing. A couple of years ago, we invested in a new harvester, with a machine harvester, which is the new technology which sorts and destems on board, and that's made a massive difference to winemaking as well. You underestimate how much. You know, when you use machine harvesters, which most people do, how much the material other than grapes can impact winemaking, but to have that removed in the field has really opened up our eyes to winemaking as well, and so much so that we've almost altered our winemaking style around the machine because we've seen it as now a piece of winemaking equipment rather than just a harvester.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've actually started fermenting straight from the harvester now. We're actually picking straight from the field, tipping directly into our red fermenters as whole berries, and starting our ferments that way too. So really bringing the handling down quite minimalist.
Yeah, and do you use just the wild yeasts that occur, or you
sometimes
you inoculate?
Yeah. Sometimes, it depends on the style we're looking for and the temperature. Often picking at night, we can get a natural cold soak as well, try and pick it as cold as possible, or we'll add the yeast to get it going as quick as possible. It depends if we're looking for a pre-soak, or often we do a post-ferment maceration as well.
So you've got a cost upside and a quality upside to the...
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's one of the things. It's the hidden things. Often people think machinery is bad, but some cases it can actually be a real asset and it actually can improve your wine.
So do you just keep that for yourself, or... Because you obviously can't move it very far from where, can't get it, move it out of the region as such, but would you share it with these guys or...?
Yeah, and we have. I mean, Pizzini have just bought their own as well, but having the same machine, if one breaks down, it's one over the fence. So
yeah, it's nice.
It's all very good to share like that.
Because it must get very busy for booking space when you have to get contractors in, because everyone's obviously, getting ripe at the same
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely, and that's why I think if you've got vineyards, we've got 200 acres of vineyards, it pays to have your own machine. You need to be able to pick when you want, not just for selling grapes, but if you want to make wine, we want to make the call and it's ready.
Yeah.
We want to be able to
pick when we can.
Yeah,
you don't want to be a day away or 2 days away.
It's probably one of the most important winemaking decisions to make is when to pick and to pick it when you want it.
Yeah.
Is there anything done by hand these days on your property?
Not a lot. We do a little bit by hand, and that's just for some winemaking styles. We do a Pinot. We want some whole bunch in it, so we do some hand picking there. We put a little bit of whole bunch into our little single vineyard Shiraz as well. So, yeah, in small cases, we'll pick a little bit by hand.
Yeah. Well, Warren, thank you for coming down. Thanks for... I know you're not far from here, you said. Thanks for joining us, and we'll come up and have a look at some of those wines, I think.
So, no worries.
And
more than welcome.
Everyone must put Chrismont on their list, for lunch, but also, the cellar door.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful.
All right.
So, thanks, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren.
So, Warren Prof from Chrismont.